Albuquerque in high school. I don't know. But they talk with each other, but they don't talk with other people. When you talk about border town, was this a situation down there, I wonder? I don't remember that being mentioned as a particular problem.
And also there, most of the students are Navajo at the border town. I think at the Indian school, though, there are Zunis and other Pueblo Indians, and this would be an interesting thing to investigate.
There's another little item about language. The language expresses the culture, and a teacher needs to understand that it expresses the culture, whether she knows Navajo or another Indian language. She needs to know that language is a very important part of their culture, and children need to know their own language so that they understand their culture and can express it. The Navajo language doesn't have any translation for a lot of English words. The word sorry, for example, there's nothing in the Navajo that explains I am sorry.
How would they express
and they have,
it?
I understand that they have to, it's quite a long explanation to get around to this meaning of being sorry. It's quite an elaborate, long, a lot of words have to be involved in this. And they just don't have a concept of sorry. So what happens to a little Navajo youngster who comes to school and somebody says, say, I'm sorry, what does sorry mean? He doesn't know. Or someone may say to him, I'm sorry, and it doesn't have any meaning for him. There are many others. I wish I knew more about some of the Navajo words and the expressions. I do know that it's quite different. The word structure is quite different, and it's a limited vocabulary, so that there are so many things we say and teach children that they have no Navajo counterpart. The teacher who could understand his language, of course, would be the ideal teacher.
Oh,
training
yes.
Navajo people to be teachers would be ideal, but until they do, there needs to be some kind of help with perhaps aids. Navajo aids would be a very good start, and I believe it's done in some of the schools.
I believe it's beginning here in Albuquerque.
So that they
I
can
understand.
Talk to the youngsters and understand, help him understand what's being said to him, what should be said, what he should be saying. Perhaps if they teach the native language in the morning and the English in the afternoon, as they do in Guatemala, for example, with a great deal of success, the youngsters learn Spanish in the morning, mm-hmm. and then after lunch, everything is in English. They have a different set of teachers for it. And children seem to manage this pretty well. And maybe if they would have this kind of thing, it would help. Or I believe that there are some books now. I've seen one storybook that has Navajo on one side and English on the other. Now, if their text could be done this way, and there's no reason why they couldn't be, since there's a written Navajo language, to have a one side that's Navajo and one side that is English. I remember as a youngster, my sister had German books. She had to go to a German class, mm-hmm. and the top sentence, the sentence was in German on the top, and then there was the English right below it, which was a real help. And I don't know why this couldn't be done with the Navajo language.
Have you seen Jack Crowder's Stephanie and the Coyote?
No.
Well, that is done exactly that way. It's a marvelous book.
Good,
I'll show you.
That would certainly, more of those. And then you need text about Indian life experiences, and I mm-hmm. suppose there is one. For example, they need to talk about sheep and hogans and mutton stew and deer hunting and
right.
maybe horses and wagons or even pickups instead of other cars. And they need to know about the deserts and the mountains instead of the streets and the stores and so on. They need to know about ceremonials and
an Indian nuts. Dick and Jane book might
yeah,
be.
Exactly. This kind of thing, Indian arts,
mm-hmm.
Indian stories, many of the Navajo myths might be written so the children could hear them in school, too. And then stories that would include some of their arts, the silversmithing and the weaving that they see done at home. all of this would help to make it meaningful to them. Fried bread instead of the bakery. All of this. Once they are well set in their own culture, then I think they're able to be interested in another culture and learn about it, just as we are at home in our Anglo culture, and then we're able to go in and think about and learn the other. There are some of the different social things in the culture that make it difficult for a youngster. For example, he's taught at home always to avert his eyes to show respect to an adult. And our culture is quite the opposite. And then we call him shifty-eyed. Why doesn't he look at me when he talks to me? And what's going to happen to a youngster who's taught at home to respect teachers, and when you respect people, you avert your eyes, you don't look at them, and he goes to school and the teacher says, look at me, I'm talking to you, look at me. And he's torn. What is he going to do? He wants to show respect, and yet she's asking him, as far as his culture is concerned, don't show me any respect. So this is a real cultural conflict, I think. We certainly have a different value for the direct eye contact than they do. And then the business of shaking the hand. An Indian once told me, I commented, Indians always shake hands, and he laughed, and he said, oh my, we thought white people always wanted to, that's why we do it. We thought we had to shake hands with white people. And then the touch is different. The white person shakes the hand. The Navajo gently touches the hand. This is the gesture of friendliness, just to gently touch it. And we say when a man gives you a gentle touch in the hand, well, he has a weak handshake. It's a weak handshake. And it doesn't connote the same hearty friendliness that the good handshake does. Well, then this business of the negative attitude that Indians teach their children about competition is a real handicap. I think this isn't just a cliche, I think this is true. They're taught not to embarrass their classmates by answering when they don't know. You call on a Navajo child, he doesn't know the answer. It would be considered very rude for someone else to raise their hand and know the answer, because this would be putting the first child in a bad light. And you just don't do that to your friends. And of course, in our culture, if you know it, you raise your hand. If competition certainly is there. I don't know how extensively this relates to the Navajo, but we do know that in poor cultures, the gratification is not postponed. They want everything right now. There's a sawmill, for example, in the northern part of New Mexico, where the Navajo, I don't know whether Navajos or not, but the Indians have to be paid every day. I work today, I get paid today. And they have to have a payroll every day for these people. Well, this would indicate, wouldn't it, that in learning in school, the children probably are geared to an immediate reward rather than waiting for the end of the term to get your mark or saying, well, we learned this because we're going to use it sometime, some future time. An Indian child would have to see an immediate reward
for learning something. Well, that reinforces the learning.
Yes.
Without that, they don't realize that they've accomplished something.
Something, too, that many of us don't think about. An Indian child traditionally learns a great deal by watching people, watching the elders, allowed to watch anything. And not very much is given to him in a verbal direction. He watches his father do things. He watches his mother do things. And we give verbal directions. Mm. So an Indian child may be watching a teacher to see what she wants, to see what she's doing, but not really be listening to her directions. And of course, she says, don't look at me, do what I say to do. And the poor little guy's in a
quandary.
Yeah, he's in confusion because he doesn't know just what to do. The real need, I suppose, is for learning language through conversation. with youngsters, having them talk with each other. I hear a bird, do you hear a bird? Yes, I hear a robin, and I hear a blue jay, and so on. Just always adding to and repeating and making it a conversational kind of thing so that the child learns to use these things in a meaningful way, not just out of the, not repetition of what teachers are saying. Actually, in our teaching setup, I think we're almost stereotyping ourselves now by saying everything is middle class and we're all middle class. I'm not sure that's always true. But he certainly needs to learn a lot of the things that are taken for granted by a white child coming into the first grade. He doesn't have as many experiences as a white child does. He doesn't, in my study with the Pueblo children, one of my conclusions here that a Jemez child enters first grade with little experience in accepting adult guidance from outside his family group. In the Head Start programs, everyone thought, well, the youngsters in an Indian village would all know each other when they came to school. They didn't. They were just as strange to each other as if they had come from another village. They play with their kinfolks, their relatives, cousins, and the people are right around their back door, those people whom they contact, but they do not go alone to the other end of the village to play with other children. They don't stay all night with other children. They don't do a lot of these socializing things that we do. They don't stay with sitters. They'll stay with a sister, a brother, mm-hmm. a relative, a grandmother, an aunt. But this is a part of the extended family. So he's had very little contact with other people in authority. He's enjoyed permissive eating, permissive sleeping, and very permissive disciplinary experiences. He's had very few household responsibilities. Children in this village were not expected to do anything until they were five. Little girls were expected to do more than little boys, but there was very little asked of them. And as one Indian expressed it, life was difficult enough, and it should be happy at the beginning and happy at the end, so that little children and old people weren't asked to do things they didn't want to do.
That's a marvelous philosophy.
An Indian child really has enjoyed a long infancy and dependency on his mother, much longer than a white child. And he's had a limited social experience.
In other words, then, the five-year-old Indian child in no way meets the social level of a five-year-old Anglo.
No, not at all. He's very dependent.
About how far back would you say that he is? Would you say that the five-year-old Indian would be more like a three-year-old?
I would think so. A three- or four-year-old in the social situation. And I think we need to recognize that he has so many things to learn. Our children learn to take directions from babysitters.
Mm-hmm.
And if we send our children to a neighbor and he misbehaves, we're willing for her to correct him.
Right.
But this is not true with many of the Indian families.
Teachers need to be aware of this when they have the children in their class. And they,
yes.
You know, and so often I feel that they aren't aware of it.
Much more needs to be written and known about this, and perhaps classes. I would say that every teacher education class ought to have one portion of it on the cultural differences, not because we do want to emphasize the things that are alike about people, but we have to understand the differences in order to correct the problems. The differences are what cause the problems. And many times people say, well, all we do is talk about the problems and the differences. Well, that's all that's causing trouble. In the ways in which we're alike, we get along just fine. And I think probably in more ways we're alike than not alike. But still, the few differences do cause a lot of difficulty. The Indian child seems to have little sense of geography in relation to in relation to other children. He seems to have less understanding of the vastness of the world and where places are in relation to his home. They don't seem to know as much. This is in public school, they don't seem to understand geography as well as white youngsters do. Now, they're watching a lot of television.
Mm-hmm.